However, we came last week to the point of page number 17 at the bottom, talking about the nominating committee. And it was my desire, in full disclosure, to say that this is a significant change from the way we have operated in the past. It is a significant change from the previous bylaws. I will try to give you a clear reason why we have recommended this change. But nevertheless, I want everybody to know, when you vote on this, this is one of the most significant things that are a part of this vote. Okay? So, we reviewed this, had a little bit of discussion on this last week, but again, because it is significant, I am wanting, just to make sure that we hear this and maybe in some ways hear it twice. So, page number 17, I'm going to read the paragraph on nominating committee and then come back, make some comments, and open it up for questions. The current elders of the church, plus two members of their choosing, serve as the annual nominating committee, will serve as the annual nominating committee and must meet to prayerfully consider the nomination of all church elders at least 1 month before the December meeting for affirming officers and the annual budget. Point number one. Any member of the church may nominate a qualified man for elder or deacon and a qualified man or woman to fill one of the administrative offices. The nominating committee is responsible. Number two, the nominating committee is responsible to consider any such congregational nominations. Number three, the nominating committee may also nominate officers. Number four, the nominating committee is responsible to put together a slate of biblically qualified officers for the coming year, including elders, deacons, administrative officers, and mission committee members if needed. So let me make a few comments about this sort of just administratively, and then kind of also the reasoning behind, after that, the reasoning behind the change. So, first of all, we, number one, want to make sure that every member of the church has the opportunity, dare we say, the right, to make a nomination. That's always been true and should always continue to be true. That goes all the way back to the very first section of the bylaws that our church government is congregational in nature. We believe in the priesthood of the believer. And we believe that you have a responsibility to pray for the leadership, pray about leadership nominations, and should have that opportunity and, again, dare I say, the right to make a nomination for someone to serve in one of these offices of the church. So that's point number one. Any member of the church may nominate someone for these offices. And then the nominating committee is responsible to consider those. However, how many of you have served on the nominating committee before? Okay, lots of us have served on the nominating committee. I believe both of you guys have served on the nominating committee. Very often we get one or two, maximum maybe three congregational nominations. And then we are making nominations as a nominating committee. We are saying, okay, we got this nomination, we got that nomination, but that's not nearly enough. So who should we be praying about nominating as a committee to fulfill these offices? So that, the buck stops with the nominating committee. If nobody nominates anybody, the nominating committee still has to nominate a slate of officers. All right? So we consider the nominations, then we also may nominate officers, and then we are responsible to put together a slate of biblically qualified officers for the church to vote on in the December meeting. All right? So that's kind of administratively. Now, here's the question. Why make this change? So in the past, the nominating committee has been made up of myself, two elders, two deacons, and two members of the church. The reason for this change, the reason for this recommended change, is perhaps the nominating committee is the most sensitive business that this church has to do. There are occasions when we have to say, this person has been nominated, but they have been nominated, but they are in some way disqualified or have not proven themselves to work well with others in leadership, or, you know, fill in the blank. We have had to say something from their past is unresolved and may hinder them from being qualified, or may just be an issue that might be embarrassing for them if someone said, hey, but what about so-and-so or something in their past? I, for myself, will acknowledge that there have been times where I have been hesitant to speak my mind in this larger group of nominating committee members, and have consequently said later to the elders, elders, we have to kill a nomination that's come in. It's made it all the way through the nominating committee. Now we need to stop it, and here's why. But we need to do it in this more private kind of setting. So, you know, as elders, we agonized over this last year, but we believe that we should, you know, constrict who the nominating committee is a little bit more than it already than it is currently, so that these conversations, these frank but difficult conversations, can be had with a select few, mostly elders. So instead of just two elders, it would be whoever is an elder that year plus two additional members. And that might be a deacon and a member. It might be two deacons. It might be two non-deacon members. But that would be up to the elders. So, I want to welcome your questions, because this is a significant change and, you know, needs to be thoroughly understood. So, any comment or question? Good. Right, so which might be three plus me. Yeah. So in traditionally it's been seven. Traditionally it's been seven. It could be as few as five or six. So let's just say we hit a year where we only have two elders. It's been a long time since that's been a problem. But if we hit a year where we only have two elders, then you add in me, that's three plus two members, that's five. So it could be as little as five, but it could be as many as eight. It could be more than it is now, depending on how many elders we have. Another... Correct. Yeah. I just am wanting to make sure that this doesn't slide under the wire or under the radar. I want people to know what we're talking about and make it clear. I think it's clear. Doesn't seem to be any issues. I also, just another reasoning is, this is a vital aspect to our church. And I believe it should be led by the elders, by the spiritual leaders. That's another kind of one of the reasonings behind it. And it would be, it is now, but it would be more so. Uh-huh. That's, I don't know why. I think that's a tradition. I don't have an answer for that. That's a tradition from the early days of the church. I think that it provides I think that it provides congregational involvement. It also it perhaps prevents the appearance of the good old boy network. I don't know that it really does. No, it won't. In fact, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, so we do have, I mean, thanks for some levity. I'm trying to make this too serious. But all right, we're a small church. I don't know how many we had here last Sunday, but probably between 75 and 85. And, you know, there's only so many men that are able and are qualified to serve as elders and deacons. So, and willing. And willing. Yeah. And so, it's going to have the appearance of a good old boy network anyway. How many times have you been nominated? Well, 7 or 8, you know, for some of these men or more. So, I there's not much we can do about that. However, I will say this. One of, you know, I've pastored this church for 14 years. One of the most delightful and yet difficult nominating years, because we had to have a most frank conversation, was when the extra 2 members were actually former elders. So we had men in the room who carried the spiritual weight of eldership, and they said, yes, we understand what this conversation is about. And we had to say no to some nominations. And so that is a little bit of what's guiding this idea of the need for the spiritual leaders of the church to have the freedom to have these conversations and lead the church. That's an experience that goes with this. That same year, some of you guys will know this too, that same year we did not select potential nominees to be on the nominating committee. So, you know, this is kind of my fault, but I think I finally learned the lesson. Like, we would say, we want Mark to serve as a deacon. We're going to put him on the nominating committee. We can kind of just get his answer right away. And it was pragmatic, but we were avoiding the big question, is there anything in so-and-so's life that disqualifies them? Because they were in the room. And so it's taken me a lot of years to learn these lessons, but that's one of the things we also chose to avoid on that particular year. And some difficult decisions had to be made, but nevertheless, the spiritual leaders were leading. It was important. Any further comments? You know, both Kenny and Greg were in these discussions formulating this paragraph. Anything you guys want to add here? All right, let's move on. And of course, you can always ask any questions in private that you would like. Please remind me, I have 2 questions for you at the end. I don't want to interrupt right now, but I have some questions for you guys. It's kind of business related, a little bit related to this and one not. All right, article number 8 on page number 18, business meetings. Regular business meetings must be held quarterly, with one extra meeting in December for affirming the new church budget and officers. The annual budget meeting is to be held in conjunction... I'm sorry, the annual business meeting is to be held in conjunction with the January quarterly meeting and must include the year-end financial report as well as annual ministry reports from the pastor and various ministries of the church. Let me finish points 1 through 4, and then we'll open this up for discussion. The financial year must run from January 1 to December 31st. By the way, we could change that anytime. I mean, that's just what we've been doing, but if somehow we felt like there was a need to, I don't know, a bunch of businesses run on a different schedule, I don't know why we would change it, but nevertheless. Number 2, the pastor or elders may call a special business meeting providing that notice of the meeting and the purpose of the meeting is stated from the pulpit the Sunday prior. Number 3, the elders must call a special congregational business meeting upon the written request of 25% of the voting members, provided such written request states the nature and purpose of the meeting. A special call business meeting of this nature must be announced 2 Sundays in advance. Number 4, the moderator of all business meetings is to be the chairman of the elders. Okay, so this is not, I don't think there's anything different here from the previous bylaws. But what it is we have 4 quarterly business meetings. The January business meeting also serves as an annual meeting at which we do an annual financial report. And as you guys probably remember from a couple of months ago, I stand up and give a little pastoral report, and we have an Awana report and a women's ministry report, and they all get stapled into a booklet and put in a file in the church office. It's a little history of that year for the ministries of the church. And there's a number of them. The deacons write a report, and the elders write a report, and all of this stuff kind of gets put in there, and you can read it, and some of us stand up and give a report. So that's 4 quarterly business meetings, 1 annual meeting combined with the quarterly business meeting in January. I can't tell you how happy I am that this church has quarterly business meetings. I have been in churches where they had monthly business meetings, and that was micromanagement. Just everybody voting on everything, and they didn't really trust the deacons and elders to do their job. I've been in churches that had an annual business meeting, and there's invariably going to be a financial surprise somewhere in the course of 1 year, and it's like fodder for somebody to get upset. And so this is the first church I've ever been in that has quarterly business meetings, and I immediately was appreciative of that balance. And then special business meetings. Almost every year we have a special business meeting here or there to vote on mostly an expense over the deacon's limit, right? The next one is point number 3. Sometimes the congregation feels the need for a special call business meeting, but the elders won't or don't want to. And so there is this mechanism where there can be a petition for a business meeting. And that petition would require the signatures of 25% of the active members of the church. Now, let's just be frank about this. This is typically because there's some discontent or division in the congregation. The most frequent way in which this would play out is a group within the church, a minority or even a majority, would like to fire the pastor. And if that's the case, let's just say that the elders are kind of protecting the pastor and they won't call a business meeting. So 25% of the members can sign a petition, and they can force a business meeting, and then they can call for a vote of confidence on that pastor, and then there would be an up or down vote on whether or not that pastor is allowed to stay. And he would need to win that to stay. If he loses that vote of confidence, he would then consequently be fired. And in my case, you pay me for 2 more weeks, and then I'm out of here. And that's just the agreement that I had when I arrived was when I leave, I get 2 more weeks worth of salary and that's it. That kind of meeting has to be announced for 2 Sundays in advance. Those are excruciating kinds of meetings. Some of you have been through them, but it's kind of a necessary reality. There are legitimate reasons to fire a pastor, and if need be, if the elders won't step up and call for that vote of confidence themselves, the congregation has sort of a release valve to do so. Anything else about this that you guys would like? I know what's coming. I think so. About the financial year. Go ahead. Okay. Right. Okay. So, I'm probably the least qualified to have an opinion on this, but, you know, I hear Stan kind of agreeing with you over here, and any deacons or elders, I mean, Greg has been very involved in budgetary things when he was a deacon, so let's have this little discussion. So you're suggesting that perhaps we change the fiscal year to run December to November, and we're still sort of not changing the... Okay. Right. Okay. So, Greg, go ahead. Well, we would end up voting on it as early as December the 10th or something. Official budget. Final annual year-end numbers. So it seems like to me, if we want to have the year-end numbers before we vote on the next year's budget, we're going to run for about 2 or 3 weeks, either of December or of January, without an official voted-on budget. To January. Okay, let me ask a couple questions about this. Okay, just is it not enough to take the first three quarters and project costs and expenses? Right. We could give the congregation the first three quarters. That, okay. All right, go ahead. Okay. I'm just sort of asking questions. I have had an opinion in the past, but how can I ask this next question without seeming self-serving? Last year, the deacons proposed a raise for myself. If that raise is not voted on by the congregation yet, what does the church pay me for the first 2 weeks of January? The old salary. Okay. Over. A couple of weeks behind. Just catch up. I mean, we've bought computers in the last 2 weeks because it's like, oh, we didn't really need this. Let's go ahead and update a computer. We've done quarter. Right, that's... already spent. So, if we move this budgetary vote to January, we're not changing the fiscal year. Is that correct? We're just content to sort of operate with a little interim in there. Okay? So then my hopefully final question is, would it be possible to move the congregational vote for church leadership officers also to that January meeting? So it's... That meeting is written into the Constitution. It is. So, what would the consequences be if we also waited to vote on new leadership in January? Essentially, this year's leadership just has to serve an extra 2 weeks, and the new guys start in the middle of January. Right, then the other guys are just serving from January the 15th to January the 15th, basically, right? That deletes the December meeting altogether, which is fine with me. It's a busy month. Yeah. I mean, that part of it I love. One less business meeting. So, essentially, what's going on here is the elders would need to, in our next meeting, change one or two things. What would we change? Is it in there? Where did that go? The annual business meeting. It's somewhere else, I think. Oh, that's right. So it's the nominating committee. So in the nominating committee, it would need to say the current elders of the church plus two members, yada, yada, yada. Nomination of all church offices, prepare a slate, no, for the January meeting for affirming officers and the annual budget. That would be the one change. I'm going to ask for a straw poll here. We would have four: January, April, July, and January, October. So it would be January, April, July, and October. And there would be, and then the annual business meeting would still be in conjunction with the January quarter. January. I don't think we have that specifically, no. Right. Oh yeah. So regular business meetings, under business meetings, regular business meetings must be held quarterly with one extra meeting in December for affirming the new church budget and officers. That would just be struck. The annual business meeting is to be held in conjunction with the January quarterly business meeting and must include year-end financial report, voting on the new budget, and affirming church officers. Okay? All right, now this is one of those situations where I learned from an old pastor, don't take a vote unless you know you're going to win it. And so... So sometimes you want to know, I want to take a straw poll and say, are you in favor of this change or are you against this change? But Gary's got a comment first. That's correct, even if it's in February or towards the... I know. Yes. Yeah. Right. So we tend, let's say we're kind of starting with a fresh budget and we go, oh, there's room in this new budget. You know, I've got somebody in mind. Maybe other missions committee members have somebody in mind. We have discussions. It takes us 6 months to choose somebody. Potentially, yeah. Recommend somebody. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a give and take between the deacons and the budget restrictions and whatever those might be, or overflow, whatever that might be, and the missions committee. Yeah. So. All right. Here I thought the nominating committee was going to be a big deal. So let's just take a quick straw poll. Would you be in favor of this change? Please raise your hand. Okay? And anybody that would be against that change? I mean, now's your chance to kind of speak your piece. Okay. So again, the elders will go behind closed doors and work on the verbiage. All right? Let's move on to the Lord's Supper, voting and amendments, and so on. The Lord's Supper. The Lord's Supper must be observed by the congregation at least once a quarter, but may be observed more frequently if desired by the pastor and elders. That's a little bit different, I think, than what we have said in the past. It seemed a little more restrictive to just once a quarter, and I pushed the church coming on as the pastor fairly early on that we would have it more frequently, and so we had it on a Sunday morning 1 month, and a Sunday night the next, and a Sunday morning, and a Sunday night, and a Sunday morning, and a Sunday night. But basically, 10 or 11 times a year, and now it's just the first Sunday of the month, almost no matter what. Now, the first Sunday of the month is May the 5th in the month of May. We haven't decided yet whether we will have communion in conjunction with our 50th anniversary celebration. It might get moved that month, but that sort of thing might change it a bit, but at least once a quarter. I believe it's important to have it more frequently. Another pastor in the future might not, and so we want to have some leeway there. Any comments or questions on communion, the Lord's Supper? Okay. Right. Yes. So what we've started doing is rotating the people. Is this correct? Wanda, Lori, Louise. So mostly that kind of happens apart from me and my little official schedule. They sometimes tell me to make a change, but otherwise they're offline saying, oh, you're involved in this too, Rachel. You're just saying, hey, I'll take the first Sunday this month. I'll take it the next. Somebody else will take it the next month, so. All right, voting and amendments. Any member whose attendance has been regular and is at least 18 years of age may vote on any congregational matter. We have very few members that are under 18, by the way. I don't think we have any right now. Probably not any since I've been the pastor here. I'm not sure everybody realizes this, but attending doesn't equal membership. Being baptized here doesn't equal membership. It's a separate decision to become a member. Yes. Members. Until they apply. That's correct. Yeah. So this is, wow, I think some of you guys have Reformed background and there are professing members and covenantal members, and that covenantal member applies to children, and we do not have that. Individuals make a conscious decision to become a member of the church. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. And you, but you need to share your testimony and have a meeting with the elders, and then there's a congregational vote. I mean, it's not a big deal to have all of that. People do it all the time, but they would be welcome to become members, yes. I have tried to encourage my boys to become members, and it's not worked. There is no age restriction. You need a believable profession of faith. You need to be baptized. All right. Number two, a majority of all members present and voting at any regular or special congregational business meeting shall be sufficient to decide any matter except as otherwise specified in these bylaws, which we will come to that in a moment. A quorum of 20 members must be present at any congregational meeting to conduct business. Everybody knows that we've not had a trouble with getting a quorum recently, but in the past, we have done minor business without a quorum. Like, do we accept last quarter's financial report? Yes, we do. Do we vote on expenses? No, we don't. Okay? So number four, these foundation... Go ahead. A greater quorum. I would say we would just change that when the time comes. And typically you would change it to 40% of the eligible members or something like that, 25% or whatever. Because then we have to do math every time. How many members do we have this quarter? And... No. No. Not off the top of my head, I don't. We are going to because we have to. Every year we'll evaluate it, so. I mean, we would have to go back into the member application files. And then who do you count? So let me just use an illustration. The Berkeys are members of First Baptist Wheatfield. But they never officially resigned their membership here. And I could give you a dozen of people like that at least. That's why we're doing some of this, these changes. Some people are. And it's just, what's that? Yeah, I mean, I know, but officially, we've never really removed them. This will do it. This, the old constitution required letters to go out, multiple letters to go out. And when it's somebody like the Berkeys or the Krims, they tell me we're going to look for another place to worship. And I'm not going to send them that letter. It's too awkward. And so, because what that letter has to say is, unless you meet with us and come back, we're going to remove you. And so it's just weird and awkward. And so there are a lot of people that are in this gray area. That's not really pertinent to this. We obviously can tell who are active members and who are not, and we could go off of that number. What I hear you guys saying is that you would recommend a number and a percentage instead of a number of members. All right. No, we could. Okay, let me keep going. These foundational documents, purpose statement, core values, articles of faith, bylaws, etc., may be amended at any regular or special call business meeting by a 3/4 majority of those present, providing a quorum is present and voting, and providing a written notice of such proposed change has been authorized by the elders in their regular meetings, and providing that the recommended amendments have been distributed to the congregation 2 weeks in advance. This is like 2 months in advance to these changes. So this is how to change the Constitution right here. Okay? Any comments on that one? We've already discussed like removing the pastor, vote of confidence, and that also is a 3/4 majority vote. Calling a pastor is a 3/4 majority vote. All right? Dissolution. No part of the net earnings of this corporation, I think this is verbatim from the old one, no part of the net earnings of this corporation shall ever inure to the benefit of any donor, member, director, or officer of the corporation or to any private individual. No donor, member, director, officer of the, of the corporation, or any private individual shall be entitled to share in the distribution of any of the corporation assets, property, etc. Upon dissolution, any assets of the corporation must be distributed to the Moody Bible Institute, if it then exists and is exempt from federal income tax, otherwise to one or more organizations recognized by the Internal Revenue as one organized exclusively for religious or charitable purposes. Okay. That is word for word from the old one. The Moody Bible Institute phrase in there has nothing to do with me and me being an alum of Moody Bible Institute. It has been in there since day one of this church because I asked a founding member about this. I said, why in the world is that in there? And he said that a number of the founding member men were going and taking night classes at Moody Bible Institute as this church was kind of forming. They greatly appreciated the ministry there, and they just stuck that in there. You kind of do need to know what to do with the property of a church in case a church closes its doors. So there it is. And I say, this is an opportunity to change it if that's what we want. There's some advantages and some disadvantages. Maybe not everybody likes Moody Bible Institute. I happen to. The disadvantage of taking out a specific entity is then whoever the remaining members are have the temptation of saying, well, I think we should give it to this, and I think we should give it to that, and I think we should give it to this. And listen, churches don't close their doors unless they have to. And so you're down to 25 or less people, and things aren't going well. I think it's good to have something specific, and somebody steps up and says, we're just going to do what it says. So, anyway, there's some advantages and disadvantages. Any comments on this dissolution, voting on amendments, etc.? Yes. This is a little bit like a will. They do not. I don't think so. I've never known of a church that has. I think, obviously, those 25 people could amend this part of the Constitution, then do whatever they want, like on the same day. Yeah. You do not want to take that power away. Congregation needs the right to change the Constitution, and if that's what happens, well, we'll all probably be dead anyway.